Epidemic, pandemic, social distance, non-existence, don't resist this, get gone in an instance, if you miss this.
This is Julian Assange, you're listening to WBAI New York. Stay strong and keep listening.
From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
25 years ago, in 1996, Democracy Now! Went on the air. Today we take a freewheeling journey through the years.
Chevron, just like Shell, uses the military to protect its oil activities. They drill and they kill.
Now, you just listen to me. You ask the questions, and I'm going to answer. You have asked questions in a hostile, combative, and even disrespectful tone, but and you have never been able to combat the facts.
Are you telling the dogs to bite the carpet? The dog has blood in its nose and its mouth. We're in occupied Western Sahara, in Laayoune, the capital of what many call Africa's last colony.
We're outside New York City's John F. Kennedy Airport, outside Terminal 4, where thousands of people have gathered to protest the Trump administration's executive order.
25 years ago, Democracy Now! Started on 9 radio stations. It now airs on over 1,500 TV and radio stations around the globe. All that and more coming up. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, a Democracy Now! Special, celebrating 25 years on the air. On February 19th, 1996, on the eve of the New Hampshire presidential primary, Democracy Now! Aired for the first time on 9 community radio stations.
This is Democracy Now! Pacifica Radio, I'm Amy Goodman in Washington. Today on Democracy Now!, Live Free or Die, a look at the political landscape in New Hampshire where the Republican Revolution has taken its toll.
If you want a taste of the country after the revolution, you might as well visit New Hampshire today, because we're the state that has the most regressive taxes in the country, that doesn't have mandatory kindergarten, that doesn't invest in its infrastructure.
Also, the politics of race in the Granite State, and money talks. Who are the millionaires having their way in Washington?
You need to go up to Bob Dole now that he's on this corporate welfare line and say, you know, okay, that's great that you've taken up this plank. Whose corporate jet did you fly up here on? Dwayne Andreas, the number 3 on the Mother Jones list, or Carl Lindner, the number 4 on the Mother Jones list? You need to relentlessly expose them.
All coming up on Democracy Now! Today is President's Day, and tomorrow is the New Hampshire primary. Welcome to the maiden voyage of Democracy Now!, Pacifica's daily national election show. Greetings to our audiences in California, Texas, New York, Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., Washington State, Kansas City, and Colorado. In this election year, we're embarking on a 9-month journey through the country and hope to pick up community radio stations in many more states as we go, as we give voice to the grassroots.
And that 9-month project will begin a quarter of a century ago. That's right, Democracy Now! Went on the air on 9 community radio stations in 1996. It now airs on over 1,500 TV and radio stations around the globe and online at democracynow.org. In 1998, Democracy Now! Documented Chevron's role in the killing of two protesters who occupied a Chevron-owned oil platform in the oil-rich Niger Delta in Nigeria. Democracy Now!'s Jeremy Scahill and I traveled to the Niger Delta to investigate and produce this special documentary, Drilling and Killing, Chevron and Nigeria's Oil Dictatorship. This is an excerpt.
Until now, Chevron has claimed that its only action against the occupation was to call the federal authorities and tell them what was happening. But in a startling admission in a three-hour interview with Democracy Now!, Chevron spokesperson Shola Amole acknowledged that Chevron did much more. He admitted that Chevron actually flew in the soldiers who did the killing, and he further admitted that those men were from the notorious Nigerian Navy.
I guess...
Who took them in?
What's that?
Who took them in?
Who took them in?
Thursday morning, the mobile police, the
We did,
Navy.
we did. We Chevron did. We took them there.
By how?
Helicopters, yes, we took them in.
Who authorized the call for the military to come in?
That's Chevron's management.
And so here we have, on May 28th, 1998, Chevron flying in the Nigerian Navy and the mobile police to confront a group of villagers who thought they were in the midst of a negotiation with the oil giant. Which brings us to another admission by Chevron spokesperson Shola Amole. Again, listen carefully.
Were any of these armed?
I don't know. So I cannot say that they came armed with, there was talk about local charms and all that, but that's neither here nor there.
So you don't think that they came onto the boat armed?
No.
It is very clear that Chevron, just like Shell, uses the military to protect its oil activities. They drill and they kill.
Again, environmentalist Oronto Douglas.
They are shooting our people for just demanding for their right.
In 1999, Democracy Now! Was in the streets of Seattle when tens of thousands of activists gathered to shut down a ministerial meeting of the World Trade Organization. In Seattle, we spoke with Indian scientist and activist Vandana Shiva and Lori Wallach of Public Citizen.
The WTO constrains every country government about literally the level of food safety it can provide its public, or whether or not poor farmers can have access to seeds, whether or not workers can be safe from asbestos.
Actually, the secrecy through which WTO was born is apparent in the fact that most parliaments had no idea what was the content of this treaty till months after it had been ratified and signed in Marrakesh. The WTO wrote the rules, it sits in judgment about implementation of those rules, and it writes the Inquisition.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, broadcasting live from Seattle.
Democracy Now! Grew into a daily television show in 2001. But one of our first broadcasts took place in August 2000 at the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia.
From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Breaking with convention, power protest, and the presidency. George Bush accepts the Republican nomination for president. We'll get reaction from Barbara Gonzalez and Jello Biafra. Also, a look at the conduct of the Philadelphia police this week and a tour through the Independent Media Center. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, broadcasting on community radio stations around the country, on public access TV stations around the country, on the internet, both live streaming and video casting at www.democracynow.org in an unprecedented community media collaboration. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we continue our reaction to the nomination speech, of the acceptance speech of George W. Bush for nomination by the Republican Party as their presidential candidate. Juan?
Yes, as I said, an amazing speech by Bush. And, attempted basically to portray himself as a caring, sensitive, compassionate conservative, but the reality of the message that he was bringing of increased military spending, of privatization of portions of Social Security accounts, of charter schools that would help to begin to tear apart the public school system rather than raise the level of the public school system throughout, I think was one that was clearly at the right fringe of American politics today.
On election day in 2000, then-President Bill Clinton called Pacifica radio station WBAI in an attempt to get out the vote for Hillary for Senate and Al Gore for president. While he may have intended to spend about 2 minutes on the phone, WBAI host Gonzalo Alberto and I kept him on the line for about half an hour, asking him about topics that weren't being discussed in the presidential race.
Mr. President, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
You're calling radio stations to tell people to get out and vote. What do you say to people who feel that the two parties are bought by corporations and that they are, at this point, feel that their vote doesn't make a difference?
There's not a shred of evidence to support that.
President Clinton, UN figures show that up to 5,000 children a month die in Iraq because of the sanctions against
Iraq. That's not true. That's not true, and that's not what they show.
The past two UN heads of the program in Iraq have quit, calling the U.S. Policy, U.S. UN policy, genocidal. What is your response to that?
They're wrong. They think that we should reward Saddam Hussein says, I'm going to starve my kids unless you let me buy nuclear weapons, chemical weapons, and biological weapons. If you let me do everything I want to do so I can get in a position to kill and intimidate people again, then I'll stop starving my kids. And so we're supposed to assume responsibility for his misconduct. That's just not right.
President Clinton, since it's rare to get you on the phone, let me ask you another question. That is, what is your position on granting Leonard Peltier, the Native American activist, executive clemency?
Well, I don't have a position I can announce yet. I think I believe there is a new application for him in there, and when I have time after the election's over, I'm going to review all the remaining executive clemency applications and see what the merits dictate. I will try to do what I think the right thing to do is based on the evidence.
Many people say that Ralph Nader is at the high percentage point he is in the polls because you've been responsible for taking the Democratic Party to the right.
What is the measure of taking the Democratic Party to the right? That we cut the welfare rolls in half, that poverty is at a 20-year low, that child poverty has been cut by a third in our administration, that the schools in this country, that the test scores among, since we've required all the schools to have basic standards, test scores among African Americans and other minorities have gone up steadily.
Can I say what
now,
some people... Wait
a minute. You started this, and every question you've asked has been hostile and combative. So you listen to my answer. Will you do that?
They've been critical.
Now, you just listen to me. You ask the questions, and I'm going to answer. You have asked questions in a hostile, combative, and even disrespectful tone, and you have never been able to combat the facts I have given you. Now, you listen to this.
That was President Clinton in a surprise call to WBAI on Election Day 2000. The White House would later call me and say they were thinking of banning me from the White House. I said, but he called me. I didn't call him. As for Native American leader Leonard Peltier, he remains in prison to this day. I had a chance to speak to Leonard on the phone from prison in Florida in 2012 during the Obama administration. Leonard, this is Amy Goodman from Democracy Now!
Hi,
I'm good. I was wondering if you have a message for President Obama.
I just hope he can, stop the wars that are going on in the world and stop getting killing all those people getting killed and give the Black Hills back to my people and turn me loose.
Can you
share with people at the news conference and with President Obama your case for why you should be, your sentence should be commuted, why you want clemency?
Well, I never got a fair trial, for one. They wouldn't allow me to put up a defense and manufactured evidence, manufactured witnesses, tortured witnesses. You know, the list is, just goes on. So I think I'm a very good candidate for, after 37 years, for clemency, or house arrest, at least.
That was Leonard Peltier. One guest who's appeared multiple times on Democracy Now! Over the years is the imprisoned former Black Panther and journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal.
We're going to interrupt the broadcast because right now we have just gotten a call from Mumia Abu-Jamal from prison in Pennsylvania. Mumia Abu-Jamal is speaking to us for the first time, no longer on death row.
This call is from the State Correctional Institution at Mahanoy and is subject to monitoring and recording.
You probably heard me refer to life as slow death row. It sounds a little dramatic, but it is really more truth to it than hyperbole. And that's because, you know, in Pennsylvania, it has the highest population, or one of the highest populations in the state, of lifers. In fact, juveniles with life sentences. And in Pennsylvania, there's no gradation. You know, all lifers are lifers, and that's for their whole life. It's slow death row, to be sure. And when you see, as I've seen, going to chow or going to a meal and seeing what I call the Million Man Wheelchair March, it makes an impact on you. You know, you look up in the morning, and there are 30 or 40 guys going to the handicap line, and they're in wheelchairs. And although some are young, most are quite old. Life means life in Pennsylvania.
The words of Mumia Abu-Jamal. After a break, we'll continue our look back at the past 25 years of Democracy Now!
Sola voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correr es mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdida en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen clandestino por no llevar papel. Pa' una ciudad del norte yo me fui a trabajar. Mi vida la dejé entre Tijuana y Bagdad. Soy una raya en el mar, fantasma en la ciudad. Mi vida va prohibida, dice la autoridad.
¿Qué será de nosotros si no pensamos en los niños?
Performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. On the evening of December 7th, that's Tuesday at 8 p.m., Lila Downs will join Noam Chomsky, Angela Davis, Arundhati Roy, Winona LaDuke, and others as we celebrate online 25 years of Democracy Now! We hope you'll join us. Visit democracynow.org for details. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. As we return to our look back at excerpts of Democracy Now! Over the past quarter of a century. On the morning of September 11th, 2001, Democracy Now! Was on the air when the World Trade Center was attacked. Broadcasting on radio for over 6 hours, Democracy Now! Covered the attacks just blocks from Ground Zero.
The latest news we have is that there have been widespread attacks that include at least 3 commercial jet crashes. We now believe perhaps 4, 3 commercial jet crashes into significant buildings. In the first attack, a plane hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center in Manhattan shortly before 9 o'clock, followed by another plane into the second tower about 20 minutes later. Both towers later collapsed. About an hour later, a plane crashed into the Pentagon, part of which later collapsed.
Democracy Now! Closely followed the fallout from the 9/11 attacks both at home and abroad. In December of 2001, Masuda Sultan, an Afghan-American woman, reported on Democracy Now! From Afghanistan about a U.S. air raid that killed 19 members of her family.
They described the scene where they were running with their kids in their arms, dodging bullets left and right while they had... Well, they saw balls of fire falling down to the earth. There were some women and children running for their lives, being shot at by a helicopter hovering over their homes. And these people were not Taliban supporters. They weren't Al-Qaeda fighters. They were simple Afghans trying to stay safe in their own country.
After Masuda Sultan came back to New York, she came on Democracy Now! Along with Rita Lazar, who lost her brother Abe Zalmanowicz at the World Trade Center.
I live on the 15th floor and ran to my neighbor's house, and she has a clear view of downtown Manhattan. And I looked out her window and saw the second plane hit the second building. And it dawned on me, my brother works there. I went down to the hospitals to see if his name was on the list. And then I realized he had died. And because he had stayed behind to stay with his quadriplegic brother, I'm sorry, friend, who couldn't get out, although he was on the 27th floor and he could have saved himself, he died. And then President Bush mentioned him in the National Cathedral speech and cited him as being a hero. And I realized that my government was going to use my brother as justification for killing other people. And that had a tremendous impact on me. I didn't want that to happen, not in my brother's name.
First of all, I want to express my condolences to Rita. I did before, but I think your brother is a hero, and you're a hero for continuing his legacy. And it's amazing to me that someone who's lost so much isn't as revenge hungry as some of the other people that seem to want to, you know, go start bombing, you know, whoever, wherever.
Masuda Sultan and Rita Lazar in our Firehouse studio at Downtown Community Television, DCTV. Rita died in 2017. As we continue our Democracy Now! Journey through the decades, we turn to May 20th, 2002, when East Timor became an independent country after decades of occupation by Indonesia. I've been reporting on the East Timorese independence movement for years. On November 12, 1991, journalist Alan Nairn and I were there when Indonesian troops armed with US M-16s opened fire on thousands of unarmed East Timorese civilians who'd gathered at the Santa Cruz Cemetery.
I lost one sister and two brothers.
It was 10 days before I was to give birth. The army was shooting people, and they would die at our feet, but you couldn't stop to help them.
I know families that were totally wiped out.
Two American newsmen badly beaten, Mr. Alan Lairn and Ms. Amy Goodman.
The Indonesian army converged in two places.
Hundreds and hundreds of troops coming straight at the Timorese.
When they came, they opened fire on the people.
We pride ourselves, and I think properly so, in standing up for human rights.
At least 271 Timorese were killed that day. The Indonesian military fractured Alan Nairn's skull. More than a decade later, East Timor became an independent country. Alan Nairn and I returned to the capital, Dili, for the celebration. Allen questioned former President Bill Clinton.
In 1999, in April, the Indonesian military and their militias massacred 50 people in the rectory in Likisa. They hacked them with machetes. 2 days later, Admiral Blair, the commander for the Pacific, your commander, met with General Wiranto, the Indonesian commander. He offered to help him in lobbying the U.S. Congress to get full U.S. military training restored. He made no mention of the Likisa massacre. During that same period, the Indonesian militias rampaged here in downtown Dili. They attacked the house of Manuel Carrascalau. They massacred the refugees there. Yet you continued for months with aid to the Indonesian military.
What
Why?
Are your questions, sir?
Why did you continue with aid to the Indonesian military
if
they were killing civilians?
I can't answer the question you ask about Admiral Blair. You'll have to ask him that because I'm not aware of that.
He was working for you. Why did you continue military aid to Indonesia?
But I understand that. I think, first of all, I don't believe America or any of the other countries was sufficiently sensitive in the beginning and for a long time, and a long time before 1999, going all the way back to the 70s, to the suffering of the people of East Timor. I don't think we can defend everything we did.
That was East Timor in 2002. Almost a year later, on February 15, 2003, millions of people around the globe rallied to say no to the Iraq War. Democracy Now! Broadcasts live from massive protest in New York. This is actor and activist Harry Belafonte.
This is not the first time that we as a people have been misled by the leadership. We were misled by those who created the falseness of the Bay of Tonkin, which falsely led us into a war with Vietnam, a war that we could not and did not win. We lied to the American people about Grenada and what was going on in that tiny island. We lied to the American people about Nicaragua, El Salvador, Cuba, and many places in the world. And we stand here today to let those people and others know that America is a vast and diverse country, and we are part of the greater truth of what makes our nation. Dr. King once said that if mankind does not put an end to war, war will put an end to mankind.
In 2004, Democracy Now! Broke the news about the ouster of Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide in a U.S.-backed coup.
From Pacifica Radio, this is a Democracy Now! Exclusive.
He was kidnapped. He said he was forced to leave Haiti.
Did U.S. security forces kidnap Haitian President Aristide? Will speak with Congressmember Maxine Waters and Aristide's close friend, TransAfrica founder Randall Robinson.
He said, tell the world it's a coup. It's a coup. It's a coup.
Representative Waters is claiming on Pacifica stations on the West Coast that Aristide was led away in handcuffs by U.S. Marines and claiming that the Marines were part of a coup to remove him. I wonder if either one of you gentlemen would comment on her comment or claim. Other than the smile.
Trying to pick the right words. If you're asking me, did that happen, the answer is no.
But any embellishment?
I think not today.
Weeks later, Democracy Now! Reported on President Aristide's return to the Caribbean.
It's been an historic 48 hours. Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide has defied Washington, returning to the Caribbean. Late last night, I returned to New York after a trip that began on Saturday when I accompanied a delegation of U.S. and Jamaican officials who set off from Miami, Florida, on a mission to escort President Aristide and his wife, Mildred, back to the Caribbean. On the plane, I asked President Aristide why he believes the U.S. wants him gone.
Those who want to invest in killing democracy, in bloodshed, they don't accept you as an elected president.
We move forward in this Democracy Now! 25-year special to 2005, When Democracy Now! Went down to New Orleans and the community of Algiers shortly after Hurricane Katrina hit, I spoke with Malik Rahim, co-founder of the Common Ground Collective. Malik showed us how a corpse still remained on the street unattended 2 weeks after the storm.
Now, his body been here for almost 2 weeks, 2 weeks tomorrow, all right, that this man been body been laying here. And there's no reason for it. I mean, that's just totally disrespect. You know, and I mean, 2 weeks, every day we ask him about come and pick it up. And he refused to come and pick it up. And you can see it, it's literally decomposing right here. Right out in the sun. Every day we sit up and we ask them about it. Because, I mean, this is closest you could get to tropical climate in America. And they won't do anything with it.
Malik, do you know who this person is?
No. But regardless of who it is, I wouldn't care if it's Saddam Hussein or Bin Laden. Nobody deserves to be left here. And the kids pass by here and they're seeing it. I mean, the elderly, this is what's frightening a lot of people into leaving. We don't know if he's a victim of vigilantes or what, but that's all we know is that his body had been allowed to remain out here for over 2 weeks.
In September 2005, Democracy Now! Spoke to Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez in his first sit-down interview in the United States.
Mr. President Hugo Chavez, your assessment of President Bush, of the invasion and occupation of Iraq, and do you think if it weren't Iraq, it would have been Venezuela?
Ellos quieren ese petróleo.
Now, it is clear that the U.S. Government wants
planificar
oil. That's why they planned.
Primero fueron por el de Venezuela.
First, they tried to get the Venezuelan
fue el
oil.
Golpe contra nosotros.
And that was the coup they staged.
Eso fue un golpe
against
petrolero.
Us. That was an oil-motivated coup.
Querían tener asegurado
they
el petróleo venezolano.
Have the control over Venezuelan oil
para luego ir por el de Irak.
Before going for the Iraq for Iraq's
fracasaron en Venezuela.
They failed in Venezuela.
Se lanzaron sobre Irak.
So they rather went to attack Iraq.
In 2007, Juan Gonzalez and I interviewed then CNN anchor Lou Dobbs on Democracy Now.
So that the question is that there is a huge disparity between the economic levels in Mexico and the economic levels in the United States. And you have properly said many times on your show that American companies are creating the problems rather than helping to alleviate the problems. Mm-hmm. And all that would be needed to do is to raise the economic level in Mexico and in the entire illegal immigration population problems would decline in this country. And not only that, but the country, if it had a higher immigration...
Are you giving me instruction or are you telling me what we agree upon?
No, we don't agree. We don't agree because you are demonizing illegal immigration as a separate issue.
How in the world can you use my name and anti-immigrant in the same breath?
When we hear comments like a third of the from you, we've played them, so we can't refute the videotape. Look, we can't refute. A third of prisoners are illegal immigrants. No, a third of prisoners are illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. Not true. 7,000 leprosy cases in the last 3 years because of illegal immigrants.
Romans
not
misspoke.
True.
We said that, and that's as straightforward as we can.
And you made an announcement on your show.
Absolutely.
And you will say it here.
Absolutely.
And it is not true. Illegal immigrants are not responsible for 7,000 cases of leprosy over the last 3 years.
Not over the last 3 years.
Lou Dobbs on Democracy Now! In 2007. Fox Business dropped his show earlier this year after he and Fox were sued for spreading lies about the 2020 election. On September 1st, 2008. Democracy Now! Producer Sharifa Gokhadoos, Nicole Salazar, and I were among the journalists arrested during a police crackdown at the Republican National Convention in St. Paul. As the riot police came at Nicole shouting, "On your face," she shouted back, "Press, press."
Oh, where is this about?
Get out of here!
Jody can't see!
Oh,
press!
Get down!
Press!
Get down on your face! On your face!
Get down on your face!
Get down on your face!
Ow!
That was Nicole Salazar screaming as the riot police took her down, bloodying her face.
As Sharif Abdelkaddous told the riot police to calm down, they kicked him twice in the chest, threw him against a wall, and arrested him as well. When I got the call on the convention floor about what had happened, I raced outside to the corner of 7th and Jackson, where the riot police had formed a line, having fully contained the area. I asked to speak with a commanding officer to get Sharif and Nicole released. Sharif, Nicole, and I would successfully sue the St. Paul and Minneapolis police and the Secret Service for our arrests. When we come back, we'll have more on our 25th anniversary special.
As I was walking, I saw a sign there. And that sign said, private property. But on the other side, it didn't say nothing. That side was made for you and me. Sing with me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. Nobody living can ever stop me as I go walking that freedom highway. Nobody living can make me turn back now. 'Cause this land was made for you and me, brothers and sisters.
Tom Morello on Democracy Now! On the evening of Tuesday, December 7th at 8 p.m. Eastern, Tom will join Noam Chomsky, Angela Davis, Arundhati Roy, Winona LaDuke, and others as we celebrate 25 years of Democracy Now! Join us for the online celebration. You can check out democracynow.org for more information. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we return now to our look back at excerpts of Democracy Now! Over the past quarter century, let's go to 2010, when the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks released footage of U.S. soldiers firing from a military helicopter on Iraqi civilians. The dead included two employees of the Reuters news agency, the 22-year-old photographer Namir Nur Eldin and the driver Saeed Shema.
Let me know when you get it. What you? Light them all up.
202 traffic, 260s.
Come on, fire.
Bushmaster 2-6. We need to move time now.
All right, we just engaged all eight individuals.
Julian Assange, tell us how you got this footage.
We got this footage sometime last year. We don't disclose precise times for reasons of source protection. When we first got it, we were told that it was important and that it showed the killing of journalists, but we didn't have any other context. And we spent quite some months after breaking the decryption looking closely into this, and the more we looked, the more disturbing it became. This is a sequence which has a lot of detail, and I think in some ways covers most of the bad aspects of the aerial war in Iraq and what we must be able to infer is going on in Afghanistan.
As we continue to look at 25 years of Democracy Now!, we turn to the Egyptian revolution that ousted President Hosni Mubarak in 2011. Democracy Now!'s Hani Massoud and Sharif Abdelkaddous were on the ground in Cairo.
Here we're on the edge of Tahrir Square. There are many rocks and stones that have littered the ground here. Army tanks are stationed, but they just stood by as Mubarak's thugs came in on horseback and camel and attacked crowds. There's many wounded here in slings. They're bandaged. Here's a child. He's about 5 or 6 years old. He's being fed yogurt by his mother. He's bruised on the side of his face. I asked his mother what happened to him, and she said, he's a revolutionary. He's fighting for his future.
That report aired on Friday, February 4th, 2011. Hosni Mubarak resigned a week later. On September 17th, 2011, Occupy Wall Street. Democracy Now! Was one of the only national news outlets to report on the first day of action. Democracy Now!'s Sam Alkoff filed this report.
On Saturday, thousands of protesters took to the streets of downtown Manhattan for what was described as an action to occupy Wall Street. Inspired by the popular uprisings of the Arab Spring and the European anti-austerity movements, Adbusters, a Vancouver-based culture-jamming magazine, put out a call for Saturday's protest on Wall Street in July. The goals were various, from limiting corporate contributions to political campaigns, to auditing the Federal Reserve, to challenging all of global capitalism. Protesters included 71-year-old Mary Ellen Marino of Princeton, New Jersey.
I came because I'm upset with the fact that the bailout of Wall Street didn't help any of the people holding mortgages. All the money went to Wall Street and none of it went to Main Street. Now, we've just learned that Geithner was actually asked to split up the Citibank and he didn't do it and Obama didn't do anything about it.
The plan wasn't simply for a one-day protest, but an ongoing and creative occupation of the financial district itself. Organizer Lorenzo Serna.
The idea is to have an encampment. Like, this isn't a one-day event. Like, we're hoping that people come prepared to stay as long as they can, and that we're there to support each other.
But on Saturday, after hundreds arrived, the NYPD shut Wall Street down itself, barricading activists off from Wall Street and forcing a move to the nearby Zuccotti Park. Despite sometimes tense standoffs with the police, hundreds slept in the park and have maintained that they will stay until their demands are met.
On September 21st, 2011, Democracy Now! Broadcast live for 6 hours from the grounds of the prison in Georgia where Troy Anthony Davis was executed. We were the only news outlet to continuously broadcast live from the prison grounds that night.
From Georgia's death row prison in Jackson, this is a Democracy Now! Special broadcast. We are just an hour from the scheduled execution of Troy Anthony Davis, an execution the whole world is watching.
And I just would like to say that, you know, I've been battling cancer for 10 years, and I don't have cancer, but I'm reaping some of the effects of the medicine. Several months ago, I was doing fine. And after that, I couldn't get up out of the chair. But I'm here to tell you that I'm going to stand here for my brother today.
Mama. Let's go.
Anthony Davis has been carried out. The time of death is 11:08 p.m. At this time, the media witnesses will be coming out to give their firsthand account of what happened during the execution.
Again, prison official sharing the news that Troy Anthony Davis was executed at 11:08. That was the time of death. I'm standing with
Wesley Boyd. And I'd like to say there's been a travesty of justice, and I'd like to tell America ought to be ashamed of itself. And God help America. And if you're alive with America, please don't come to Georgia. Don't come to Georgia. Don't buy any Georgia pecans. Don't buy any Georgia peaches. Don't buy any trade with Georgia, the whole world. Don't buy anything with Georgia. God bless America. And God bless Troy Davis.
In July 2014, Israel launched a massive 50-day assault on Gaza, ultimately killing more than 2,200 Palestinians, the majority of them civilian, including more than 500 children. An Israeli gunboat shelled a group of Palestinian children on a Gaza beach, killing four of them. Democracy Now!'s Sharif Abdo-Quddus was in Gaza, where he spoke with the boys' families.
I also met with the mother today of Muhammad, the 11-year-old who was killed. She said he was a child that loved the sea. He had seven. He has seven sisters. His father ruined his back about 10 years ago fishing, and they were waiting for him to grow and become the family breadwinner. And there was just deep, deep tragedy and sorrow in the house.
On August 9th, 2014, in Ferguson, Missouri, Darren Wilson, a white police officer, fatally shot unarmed African-American teenager Michael Brown. The shooting sparked mass protests and became a key moment in the Black Lives Matter movement. In the aftermath of the shooting, Democracy Now! Traveled to Ferguson.
So tell me your name and tell me what your sign says and what do you think?
My name is Rona and my sign is Negro Spring. The same as the Arabs fought for their rights, for their civil rights to oust their corrupt government, we're fighting for our civil rights, our human rights. We would like, as an end result to this, one of the end results, for there to be a law. Police officers should not be allowed to hide behind a badge when they commit a crime. When we commit a crime, we have the penalties. They should have penalties. It's not fair. They should not be treated like extra special humans.
Now! What do we want?
Justice!
In July 2015, Democracy Now! Interviewed all three co-founders of the Black Lives Matter movement, Patrice Cullors, Opal Tometi, and Alicia Garza. This is Alicia.
The Black Lives Matter movement has to, by its very nature, be intersectional because of the complexities of who Black people are in this country and throughout the world. There's nothing separate about wages from Black life and the survival of Black people than police violence and police terrorism. We even still have a situation in this country where we have Black workers who are not covered by federal labor protections, like domestic workers and farm workers. So we certainly can't just look at the issues of police violence. Police violence is the tip of the iceberg when it relates to the conditions overall of Black people across the globe.
In 2015, Democracy Now!'s Nermeen Sheikh and I and the team were in Paris for the historic UN Climate Summit. While in France, we traveled an hour and a half north to the city of Calais, site of the largest refugee camp in France. 6,000 to 7,000 people were camped out in makeshift tents in what was known as the jungle.
My name is Majd. I'm from Syria. I'm here like everyone. I'm a refugee escaped from the war. Everyone is fighting in my country. Yes. So I escaped from the war. I don't want to be dead for nothing.
We're just back from Majid's tent where he lives with two other men, and we're now on the street of, well, makeshift restaurants. There's a barber shop. This is the Kabul Cafe. And right here, as we're going in, is a map of the whole camp.
My name is Sikandar. I'm from Afghanistan.
The map of this camp, it's like a map of the world or a part of the world.
Yeah.
It's a map of where refugees are from. Most of these countries have been bombed by the United States.
I really didn't think about it. The map of the jungle is looking like the map of the world.
Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, yeah. Sudan.
Yeah, it's true. I didn't think about it, but yeah, it's true.
My name is Sadiq Hussein Khel, and I am from Afghanistan.
So what do you think the U.S. should be doing now?
You know, U.S. is just increasing the war. Actually, U.S. don't want to finish the war. It's their game. It's the game of George W. Bush, Obama, and all the European Union. They don't want to finish that.
In September 2016, Democracy Now! Traveled to the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota to document the historic indigenous uprising against the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Criminals! You guys are criminals! Go get your money somewhere else!
Yes, you!
We're standing at the construction site of the Dakota Access Pipeline. It looks like there are at least three bulldozers that are, to people's surprise at this moment, actually bulldozing the land. There's a helicopter above, there's security here, and hundreds of people have been marching up when they heard that the construction site is actually active right now.
Look what you've done!
can't do it!
People have gone through the fence, men, women, and children. The bulldozers are still going, and they're yelling at the men in hard hats. One man in hard hat threw one of the protesters down. Security have dogs.
Amy Goodman, this guy maced me in the face.
Can you show us the label?
Look, it's all over my sunglasses. Just maced me in the face. Dog bit him right now.
Throw the dog on me. He's throw the dog on me. Look at this. Look at this.
Let me say.
You throw the dog on me. No, you did it on purpose, man.
Let me say.
Yeah, keep going. Over there with that dog. I was like walking, throw the dog on me straight, even without any warning, you know? Look at this. Look at this.
That dog,
yeah, the dog did it, you know? Look at this. Yeah, dog did it.
Ma'am, your dog just bit a protester. Are you telling the dogs to bite the protester? The dog has blood in its nose and its mouth. Why are you letting her dog go after the protesters? It's covered in blood.
Only a few hours before the attack, we sat down with Standing Rock Sioux tribal historian LaDonna Bravebull Allard.
I don't understand why we are expendable in America. I keep telling people, we do our best. We have always been here. This is our land. Why should we fight to live in our own land? Why should we have to do that over and over again? So we have no choice. We have to stand. No matter what happens, we have to stand to save the water.
North Dakota issued an arrest warrant for me after the Democracy Now! Video of the dogs attacking indigenous water protectors went viral. We returned for the arraignment, but they would ultimately drop the charges. In late 2016, Democracy Now! Became the first foreign television news crew to get into occupied Western Sahara in years.
We're in occupied Western Sahara, in Layoun, the capital of what many call Africa's last colony. Morocco occupied Western Sahara more than 40 years ago, in 1975. Western Sahara, where peaceful protesters led by women are beaten in the streets. Thousands have been tortured, imprisoned, killed, and disappeared while resisting the Moroccan occupation.
He jabbed right at my eye with his baton. I was yelling at him, "Hey, you Moroccan, you pulled out my eye."
Where natural resources are plundered from phosphates to fish.
I say that our damnation comes from the natural resources we have here. If it wasn't for these natural resources, Morocco would never have invaded Western Sahara.
Where a massive wall divides a people, the Sahrawi, the native population, denied a vote for self-determination.
If we don't speak out, especially us as victims who have suffered all of this, if we don't speak out and defend our cause, this problem will remain.
In the days after President Donald Trump's inauguration in 2017, Democracy Now! Closely covered the growing protest movement from the historic Women's March to protests over Trump's Muslim ban. This is Democracy Now!'s Nermeen Sheikh at Kennedy Airport.
We're outside New York City's John F. Kennedy Airport, outside Terminal 4, where thousands of people have gathered to protest the Trump administration's executive order, which has prevented many people from seven Muslim-majority countries from entering the United States. More than 10 of them here detained at Terminal 4. Thousands of people here chanting, "Let them in. This is what democracy looks like, and refugees welcome here." Let's talk to some of the people here.
My name is Mamida Ahmed, and I'm here today because as a Muslim woman, I find this ban extremely just personal to me because I have family members who are on visa, and now they are at risk of not being able to leave or enter the country.
My name is Rui Kapadia, and I'm from Boca Island Valley Stream.
What are your concerns?
for Muslims who are here already in the U.S. under a Trump administration, under this administration?
Well, I would say all my Muslims, brothers and sisters, there's nothing to fear. Your actions are more important. Keep doing what you're doing, and we are not going to do anything wrong. We are going to be unapologetic Muslims.
In 2018, the Democracy Now! Team reported from the U.S.-Mexico border in Texas.
We're broadcasting from Brownsville, Texas, along the U.S.-Mexico border. Behind me, the border wall that stretches in sections all the way through California. This Rio Grande Valley is the epicenter of the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy that's led to the forcible separation of more than 2,000 children from their parents.
People who are at the Keep Families Together rally here in Brownsville have now walked forward to enter the federal courthouse here in Brownsville, where so many migrants have been taken, so many migrants who've been separated from their children. They're demanding to go inside. Police are here, security of the Department of Homeland Security. We'll see what happens.
My name is Julie Madrigal. We're here to request access to the court hearings that are taking place. So that's the main reason we're here. We want to be allowed into the hearings at this moment.
If they don't get him,
shut it down.
If she don't get him,
shut it down.
If he don't get him,
shut it down.
We're about to enter the federal courthouse to see the treatment of the children and the parents. Because Trump has said that the parents can't, they won't be separating the children, but Trump also said that that they shouldn't even have court or lawyers or judges.
On election night 2018, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez gave Democracy Now! One of her first interviews as she was elected to Congress.
I do believe that our president has abdicated his responsibility as a leader of all people in the United States. He has very clearly drawn lines into which Americans he champions and which Americans he doesn't. And that is why I feel we have a very important duty to not only fight against the spread of anti-Semitism, racism, xenophobia, but that we need to affirmatively champion the causes of these communities and our neighbors, because this is a very dangerous time in our democracy, and this is a very dangerous administration that we cannot take for granted. And we need to make sure that we are shoring up support of these communities in very tangible ways.
Weeks later, December 2018, Democracy Now! Traveled to Poland for the UN Climate Summit, where I spoke with then 15-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg in her first broadcast interview in the United States.
Because what we do now, future generations can't undo in the future. We are deciding right now how we want our future to look like.
And when did you decide climate change was the issue you wanted to devote your life to?
I have read a lot of about it, and one thing that I found very scary is tipping points. That once we reach tipping points, then there's no going back. Then we start a chain reaction beyond our control, and that is very scary. And so that I thought, instead of worrying about how the future might turn out, you should try to change it while you still can. So that's what I wanted to do.
And we end our 25th anniversary special with the words of Angela Davis, speaking in June 2020, just weeks after Minneapolis police murdered George Floyd, sparking racial justice protests across the country and around the world.
This is an extraordinary moment. I've never experienced anything like the conditions we are currently experiencing. The conjuncture created by the COVID-19 pandemic and the recognition of the systemic racism that has been rendered visible under these conditions because of the disproportionate deaths in Black and Latinx communities. And this is a moment I don't know whether I ever expected to experience.
Those are just some of the highlights from the first 25 years of Democracy Now! We'll be celebrating our 25th anniversary online, hopefully with you, on the evening of December 7th at 8 p.m. Eastern with a virtual event featuring Angela Davis, Arundhati Roy, Noam Chomsky, Winona LaDuke, plus others, with musical performances by Lila Downs and Tom Morello. Visit democracynow.org for details. We want to thank the thousands of people who've helped us over these 25 years. What an honor it has been to work with all of you, and how many years more we look forward to. With my colleagues Juan Gonzalez and Nermeen Sheikh, we thank you all for being with us for these 25 years. I'm Amy Goodman.
33 cents a day. Not much, is it? Loose change. A third of a cup of coffee. It's nothing. But did you know that 33 cents a day can help WBAI stay on the air? That's all it takes. As little as 33 cents a day, $10 a month, you can be a BAI buddy. A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring monthly donation to WBAI using either a credit card, debit card, or by electronic fund transfer from your bank account. It's safe, secure, and easy, and it helps keep our unique, alternative, and diverse programming on the air. You'll get a WBAI membership card.